fuck's sake, how the fuck have Australia won?
Fuck's sake, fuck's sake, fuck's sake! It's the last thing we needed. You Aussies going into an Ashes series, a home Ashes series, all up yourself, all confident. These are just a great bunch of blokes, you know, the tank.
You jammy fucking cunts, we battered you in 12 overs. Oh well, onto the Ashes.
You lucky fucking Aussie cunts.
It's not an important World Cup anyway, load of shit. Fucking enjoy your miserable victory. It's all about the Ashes. Jog on.
Alright, congrats Aussies. I don't know how you guys do it in World Cups, but you guys have done it again. It's not fair because half of the country is asleep right now. You guys don't even give a shit about T20s, but congratulations regardless. Also, there's a chip inside Mitch Marsh's bat.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Fuck you, boys.
Oh, yes, that is the sound of disappointment, heartbreak, and satisfaction all rolled into one. Welcome to The Grey Cricketer, brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com, user code CHAMP at checkout. You guys know the drill for the magic to happen. Brad Haddon's on the show, George Bailey's on the show, and the World Cup, for the first time, is not on the show, but it's here, it's coming. Back to where it belongs. Really doesn't belong here at all in any way, in any capacity. But, you know, it's home and it's safe and I feel good because I saw my team hold up some silverware. There was some fireworks or some shit. It was on at a weird time. Didn't really catch it, if I'm honest. But, oh, doesn't it feel good, Sam Perry?
Feels so good. It's been a few years for Australia between men's trophies.
Yeah.
But it feels so right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm tempted to say there are other teams who may have been more deserving. But I'm not. I'm not going to say that.
I
just watched a couple of horses
head
out there, give it a whack, and all of a sudden we've got trophy again. I feel arrogant and I feel safe.
Yeah. I saw a lot of shit teams get knocked out. Get knocked out. PNG, India.
Yep.
Fucking pack 'em.
Yep.
Pack 'em stand.
Pack 'em stand.
What? You know, a lot of those visceral minutes were right. How the fuck did we win that? Was it 7 out of 8 tosses? Did Aaron Finch Finch Festival. You know, was he unlucky to not get player of the tournament by winning all the tosses? You know, how important was that? I don't know. I just saw the yellow and the hue of the light green lifting up a trophy.
Yeah.
That's success.
It feels nice.
It feels nice because the women have been flying the flag for years. You're right in saying that. They've been winning everything.
Doesn't it feel nice to hear the pain of people from other countries who concede in their pain that we somehow managed to just keep doing it? Because, like, we may have even forgotten a little bit.
Those blokes just lob up.
But the DNA is still there.
It's DNA, baby.
And it's just another contribution to the pain. And, you know, for those out there, and I've seen a few of you try and do it, a few of you from the UK especially, other countries, actually there's a lot more of a culture of authentic congratulations in, say, Asia, in India, Pakistan, etc. We'll accept those congratulations.
Yeah.
But over in England, a little bit of faux or false magnanimity, you know. People out there saying, well, congratulations, Australia. The best way to be magnanimous is to show us your pain.
Yeah.
That's a painful, painful win.
Yep.
Especially against the backdrop.
Hey, that is a dagger.
Of a tuned up, sophisticated England white ball
side.
They
were tuned up.
Led by Daddy Morgan.
Yeah, they were tuned up. They're just that's an automobile.
They're not even in the country anymore. They sent journos over there.
Mm.
Who's they? Just the papers. and they were completely entitled to go over there.
Yep.
And that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Australia. There's just demolition job. There's, you know, Marsh. There's Bison Marsh coming out there.
Yep.
Bang, 6 off Milne.
Yep.
Papi Stoinis doing his thing. You know, Zampa miserly. The Bush Horse Hoff, 3 for 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's fine. I don't know what I watched all tournament, but I liked it.
I woke up to a lot of messages this morning, basically from like Aussie mates being like, mate, did you watch the cricket last night? It's like, no one's watched it since the last game. Well, people literally had a look at a final.
Yeah.
Haven't seen any of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Have a look at it. Oh, yeah, what time's it? Okay, I'm going to wake up early, I guess.
How are you going to watch it? Yeah, it's not hard. It's a mini. It's like, what time's a mini out? It was a bit like that. And does that make this the greatest World Cup win of all? Because if you look at it from a, was it like, if you get the continuum going of, because you know what, like grace is basically success without care. Is this the greatest?
Grace is success without care.
How little can it look? Well, look at Mark Waugh.
You know, I always do.
How little can you care and succeed?
Yep.
This is what, I mean, a lot of analytics and data and intelligence and brains go into how to win a T20 match. Mm-hmm. I was just looking at bench press.
Yep.
I that was a bench press win. That was give it a whack.
Saw a lot of blokes just turning up. They were bigger. And
they look big in the Guernsey.
And it just felt like blokes were going out there with a baggy green on. Yeah. Metaphorically.
Yeah.
Metaphorically. There was a lot of guys wearing Steve Waugh jerseys underneath their own jerseys. It felt true blue. Mm. It felt fucking on a trip to, you know, Gallipoli, Anzac Cove. Yeah. It had all that.
In terms of creating a national mythology.
That sort of weight of, mythology is the right word.
He goes, is it one of the all-time beat them in the tunnel victories? Was that a tunnel victory?
Well, I said after the semifinals, I was just couldn't be more convinced that New Zealand couldn't get past Australia. And New Zealand, and this is the great thing about winning, you can be so magnanimous in victory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, New Zealand, what a wonderful country. What a great country, a great set of fellas.
Yep.
They are such a good cricket team.
Great foreign policy.
One of my favourites.
Yeah.
As foreign policy goes.
Great schooner.
Kiwis. New Zealand, great schooner.
Dry humour.
Very dry. Yeah. There's some stuff underneath I can't quite figure out just yet.
Yeah, skeleton stuff. A couple of skeletons. Don't we all?
Yeah.
Nice people. One thing I like about this victory is we're talking about England. New Zealand.
That's actually, New Zealand are
one win away from being the ODI tied winners.
Yeah.
The Test champ. Yeah.
Wink and a nod.
Yeah, wink and a nod win. Test championship. And the T20 stuff. And now it's like, how does this roll into the ashes, you know? It's very unfair. But
I think there were certain teams which I think there was probably maybe not India. But so there's definitely two teams that if they had won, it would have meant so much. England, definitely.
Definitely two teams. What does that say about cricket? There's two teams that would have cared about winning this.
No, but in terms of like a nice narrative, a story, because cricket has to mean something. Like we're always asking, what does this mean? And inevitably the answer is, or invariably the answer is nothing.
Nothing, indeed.
Yeah, none of this means anything.
We'll forget this victory in 3 days.
Unless you score runs personally on a Saturday, none of this means anything. But like if England had won the game, that's like 2019, white ball program, validation, great sort of...
Unify the belts.
Great five players, you know, New Zealand as well, same story. Mm. You know,
hard-working team.
Then it sort of would have had more gravitas with the 2019 World Cup final as well. Yeah. India, less of a story, I think, because they've...
Oh, Asian Century, they're all coming.
Yeah, sure,
IPL,
sure.
You know,
yeah, I can't stop
the IPL juggernaut.
I can confect a narrative in any sense.
You can say anything. You can put any arrangement of words
together.
Australia
is literally lob up. We'll give them a whack. We'll see where we find ourselves. And we'll watch it. We might catch a highlight. And you know what? That's just fucking worked. That has to hurt for everyone else.
Do you think like couching Australia's victory in terms of like we're just big, dumb, oafish, penis out cricketers that just win when we feel like it. Do you think that kind of is insulting to the Australian setup?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, if I was a player listening to this, I mean they won't surface for 4.5 days.
Yes. I'm sure that'd be fine.
Such is the circuit in the UAE. But yeah, I would find that insulting, yeah, because they're really skilled players, but you know, there are just better teams.
In my opinion. Like until this tournament, he goes, like this was the nerd era of T20 cricket. Like this was the cock show era was over a long time ago.
Yeah.
And people were enjoying letting Australia know that. Like we just become dumb baboons playing outdated oafish cricket.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Then we won a couple of tosses against South Africa and Pakistan and whacked a few, and now we're the best white ball team in the world.
Aaron Finch won 7 out of 8 tosses. I don't know. I don't remember when the last game was when someone batted first that wasn't like Namibia or Scotland. Who won a game. But you know what? I don't care.
We're going to win the next World Cup too.
I know. We're going to go back to back.
We're just going to bump them and get in the front dog. And we all saw it coming. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Everyone predicted this.
I feel like I'm being representative of how like 98% of the cricket world is be like, how the fuck have they won that? Mm. You know? And that's just the feeling. But like from the perspective of, you know, summer's just starting in Australia, obviously not in Melbourne, it's fucking freezing. But for the rest of it, it's like, we just, cricket's come back to the consciousness. You know, the bat off is about to begin, the Sheffield Shield.
Yep.
You know, the first Ashes test around the corner, English players arriving, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So people, it's just like, to wake up to cricket.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I recognise that jersey. Oh, we win? Yeah, I saw Finch lift a trophy. Yeah, all good. Yeah.
I was watching the Today Show last week at like breakfast. I saw like a 15-second highlight package, and now the highlights package is going for like 45 seconds. Some fireworks are going off. Yeah. And is that, did we win that? Yeah. Is that Mitch Marsh? Yeah. Okay.
And I know it's summer because the AFL trade season just sort of kicked off.
Of course, yeah.
That's how I know it's summer.
Indeed. Well, you know, Richmond Football Club signed up to COP26, you know, to get to net zero and that kind of thing. Well, I mean, now, you know. Sorry, go.
I was going to say, maybe we should actually celebrate the Australian team because, as I said on the, you know, YouTube and Patreon show this morning, that, you know, they've beaten South Africa, they beat Sri Lanka, they beat the West Indies, they beat Pakistan, they beat New Zealand.
Yep.
Have I missed anyone? Not sure. So, you know, if you beat those teams in a World Cup, you're most likely going to get pretty close. Okay. In my view, Australia didn't have to play the two best teams in the world, India and England. They didn't have to play them, but that's not anyone's problem. But I'm just saying, like, if you win those games, you're going to go pretty close. And yeah, okay, they beat a red hot Pakistan from a come from behind victory. Have they smashed New Zealand? It wasn't smashing. Yeah. It wasn't smashing.
Eight wickets,
but seven balls left. It was good performance. But they were never in danger really in the final.
Man, I mean, we haven't talked at all about the game, but like, New Zealand didn't have enough runs at the halfway point of their first innings.
Yeah.
Williamson played one of the all-time great innings to bump them up to 170. And it was like, oh, is there a bit of kinetic energy behind this? Have they stormed home a little bit? And then like a couple of overs into Australia's innings, fucking Mitch Marsh comes out, picks up Adam Milne for six. One of the fucking greatest shots
it's just
in the
so
circumstance.
Alpha.
Mate, so alpha.
Yeah.
Then a boundary, Nurdles one to third, and then pulls him again.
He's off 14 off three. Mate, see you later.
It was, and they're like, just him and Warner were just bossing it. They were dicking it, and it was after eight overs. It was like, oh, this is that they're in complete control here.
So I'm wary of like people who may not have watched the tournament as we have, being a bit like, fucking hell, boys, a little bit harsh. Like, team's done really well, just won a World Cup. That is true. That is true. However, if I can throw in a little caveat, if they won the game batting first, you know, then it's like fucking no questions. I just think our experience watching this, if you bat second in this tournament, it is an enormous advantage because basically every team won chasing in this World Cup. And that's also true. So maybe both things can be true. Now, they have played really well. They beat a red-hot Pakistan, come from behind, some amazing individual performances in both the semifinal and the final. But big advantage, it seemed, batting second. Is that fair? I'm sort of tiptoeing, but I'm just trying to be delicate to people who maybe haven't consumed the games as we have.
I think T20 is a dumb and funny format and made especially so in conditions where, you know, both innings can be very different. Right. But I think that if, you know, the boys have probably, as we record, still got their ski goggles on, spraying around whatever sponsor beer
they've
got.
Brought ski goggles, by the way, to the UAE.
Yeah.
Kind of Aspen after this.
Then, you know, the time for sort of delicately outlining how there was a fair bit of luck involved is later. For now, we just say that we're the best.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think Doss put it best. Doss has had the all-time best last sort of 72 hours or so in terms of content, I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
he's been red hot. But as he Instagrammed the other day, sorry, a couple of hours ago, he Instagrammed publicly a message to Justin Langer, whose number I presume he has.
That's how I do it.
As they say, my brother, winners are grinners. Hopefully the hound dogs will be off your case and provide you with the respect you really deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the, you know, what's the word? Some of the reflections in the next couple of days are going to be good.
Yeah.
But I think they're, you know, if you win, you're entitled to it. You can play it however you like.
Yeah.
And, you know, was Langer right all along? You know, were those like us? Well, I'll just say me. You know, was Langer, did he have the vision all along? That's going to be the thing that's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
He's won the World Cup.
You said this morning on one of the seven shows we've done today that like you can't argue that Australia have played with a level of freedom that we've not seen for a long time in a white ball setup, the kind of freedom that of guys express themselves. We've not seen it in a long time. And that has to be about an environment which is supportive. And you've seen all this stuff like on social media with like Mitch Marsh, Stoinis. There's like a lot of love for each other in that group. And that can't be that has to be partially at least facilitated by the environment that they're in, which exactly. Which is facilitated by the support staff and the coaching staff.
So yeah, was Langer right a lot? Like or has he is this one of the great results? Like has Langer demonstrably altered his approach following critiques from his players?
It'd be sixth time lucky.
Step back
case.
A little bit.
Let's be
and
honest.
Then the benefits have ensued.
Yeah.
And you know? No, I don't think so. I think the children were wrong all along.
yeah.
And I think those who criticised Langer were dogs.
Yeah. Hounds.
People wrote off David Warner. People asked questions about David Warner. The Bulls back, mate, baby. The Bulls really back. The Bulls properly back. I wondered if he'd be back. He's knocked at the door. He's burst through. He's barking.
Yeah. So we spoke to Brad Haddon, which we'll get to in a moment's time, who was obviously in the support staff for – he was in the coaching staff for Sunrisers, Dave Warner's former IPL team. I think there's absolutely no danger he'll be retained by Hyderabad. But he gave an interesting insight. I mean, just listen to the answer. But yeah, I just did not see this coming. It's like a different player. You know, it's going back to what we've seen for the last decade, essentially, of Dave Warner opening the batting for Australia. You know, it's actually been – as a tournament as a whole – it's actually the number 3 to 5, which has scored the most runs. Not that many openers. Caveat that with the two highest run scorers of the tournament were Bubba Azam and Dave Warner, who opened the batting. Uh-oh. Okay. But I feel like there hasn't been those massive scores.
Hasn't been a big power play tournament.
Yeah. Though now that I say that, like Juss Butler was the only guy who scored 100 and he opens the batting. So what the fuck am I talking about? I don't know. Maybe it's like actually the scores as a batting team in general were actually quite low. There was only one score above 200 in the entire World Cup, and that was India versus Scotland or Namibia or some shit. One of the minnows. Anyway, that's a really good point that I've made very eloquently. But the point is that you know, Dave Warner's had a fucking sensational tournament and gets player of the tournament. But that actually could have been – it's funny, isn't it? Because in the Australian setup, like Mitch Marsh has probably had like the breakthrough, but then Zampa had – a sensational tournament. Hazelwood did well.
I think Zorba should have got player of the tournament because I don't think it can be underestimated how much he held that entire bowling team together as this sole spinner and the pressure that you'd be under being the only spinner in a team playing in the UAE where the accepted wisdom ahead of the tournament was that you needed a couple of spinners. And India brought a couple of spinners over.
Saw in the IPL,
like
didn't we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for them to... I guess, load him with the entire responsibility of the frontline spin. If that doesn't come off for Zampa, I feel like the whole bowling innings falls apart. And, you know, they already had to use three guys for the chop-out overs.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, you know, played some pretty good roles. Maxwell, especially with the ball, was great. But, you know, once you get into that Australian bowling attack, if one or two guys stuff up, you can really do some damage. But Zampa just held it all together. Every time he came on to bowl, he wrested the advantage back to Australia. And I think that kind of bowling permitted the Warners and the Mitch Marshes, because there's multiples of them, to do what they did. And, you know, he's perennially underestimated. He always says that, Zampa. But, like, just the consistency was exceptional. And
he didn't have a bad game.
He didn't.
Did he go for more than 30 in any game?
Not sure.
Yeah.
But every time he came on, he won. He just won against every single team doing that. So
significant performance in the semifinals.
I think England might have got hold of him, actually.
That would be England's frustration. They fucking demolished us in 12 overs. And it was, okay.
As one journo, and they know who they are, said to me this morning. This was, this whole tournament win was just a perfect tune-up for the real stuff.
It's a tune-up.
It was a tune-up.
Yeah, we're all just chassis, sitting in the garage, getting a little tune-up for the big dance.
I read someone else say, it doesn't matter if Australia lost 5 series heading into this tournament. I mean, you know. They didn't have their Ferraris. You don't take the Ferrari out for a spin every Sunday.
That's right.
You bring it out every so often.
Every 4 years, apparently.
Exactly. And only when it feels like it and if it hasn't got something else on at the time.
I remember a guy living in the UK got a new pair of shoes once and he said, I'm not going to wear these out if it's dirty outside. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Even if it's dirty outside.
I used to live with some guys who like really were into their football and they bought like an official Premier League ball. But then they refused to play with it on the street because they didn't want to like scuff it they're just like, no, it's only for specific parks and stuff. Like, I have a fucking ball. What's it for?
It weighs $160.
Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, Zampa by Will. And,
the old bush horse.
Yeah, I tell you one thing I've learnt, or just how easily, like, chop outs just come into my lexicon. Like, it's the most normal thing. We had a meeting the other day, and a goat bloke just, like, dropped it in, like, unironically, I think. He said, chop out there.
Yeah.
Sorry, what? Is that just a thing we're saying now?
Well, it's like seeing, and you, like, once you see the car once, I can see it everywhere.
Exactly, yeah. Can't stop seeing it.
Yeah. Well, Maxwell, a couple of good chop outs.
Okay. Well, I guess the main takeaway is that Australia are the greatest team ever. So just to highlight the scheduling of world cricket at the moment, New Zealand play their first T20 game against India in 2 days' time, November 17.
And we'll be covering that, won't we?
Yeah, we'll be covering that.
Wouldn't have thought so.
Would no have thought so. And then the West Indies are already in Sri Lanka. Pakistan are already in Bangladesh. They've run Bangladesh. So basically everyone's already got the fuck out of the UAE and they're playing some other series now. And to me, talk about tune-ups. They've just had a World Cup final. They're going to play in three T20s, a test match and some other shit. A couple of ODIs or whatever.
Time for some truly memorable cricket.
Do you remember the... No, I don't.
What happened in the semi?
Yeah. Name three things that happened in the Bangladesh game. No, thank
Can't
you.
Can't do that.
Okay. Now, we spoke to George Bailey, selector of the Australian cricket team. And in many ways, this was his victory, which we put to. But before we get to George, we've got to thank... this interview is brought to you by T20 star Shane Watson's company. Mm. Is that fair to say? Watson's company.
Yeah.
Obviously, Watto had a breakout series himself commentating with the ICC feed over there in Dubai.
I'd be extremely surprised if he's been picked up this summer.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
Thoughtful, erudite, knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. Salad.
Oh, mate, the salad. And
thoughtful,
the
erudite, exactly. Salad.
Yeah.
The three big things.
Exactly. Yeah. How's his salad? Yeah.
Yeah, well.
If you want a bat that gives you the inner confidence to take the bowler over the top, as Watto did, I've seen some social footage of Watto taking like Facebook influencers over the top at the nets.
Oh yeah,
mate! The sound of the ball off the bat.
Different
the
sound,
mate. Actually, last night there was a point where someone was—I can't remember who he was commentating with—but I think Santner was tossing it up or something, and he had mid on and mid off up,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, "Oh, Watto, you'd be down the deck to this, wouldn't you?" And he's like, "Well, it wasn't much of a charger, but yeah, I'd be loading up." I mean, he didn't swear, but yeah. And he got to bring it home as well, Watto, as well. He got some social clips of that, but he's also got his kit, T20 stars. Cricket season's starting, cricket season's begun, wherever you are.
Yeah.
You got some kit that's affordable. Finally. You don't have to go into debt. You don't have to start selling NFTs. You don't have to start looking at some digital clips and saying, how can I package this up so that you can digitally and own it with a certificate of authenticity or some shit, and then someone tells you there's a drop of something else. Yeah. And
Unless you want to. I mean, you can still do that if you want to.
I guess you can do all those things if you need to raise the funds to buy a cricket kit. Or
if you need it to be your identity.
You could just have a little bit of money if you're lucky, and you can afford some cricket kit that's going to perform well for you.
Yeah.
T20stars.com. That's run by Shane Watson. He knows what he's talking about.
Here he is, George Bailey.
Well, we're lucky enough to be joined by the chief selector of the Australian men's cricket side, fresh from Australia's dominant T20 World Cup win against New Zealand, George Bailey. George, they say success has many fathers and failure is an orphan. Are you one of the fathers of today's victory?
No, I think the players will rightly receive and a deserved. I think they should get all the credit. They've been extraordinary. It was pretty. You know, the game itself was great to watch, but seeing how genuine that sort of excitement and happiness there was for each other and post that victory was pretty special.
This is very much Team GB, though, isn't it? It's George Bailey's team now. This is Team GB. But I'm going to ask you, as a former player, you were obviously there last time Australia won some silverware, which is just a football term, but now it's in cricket. Mm. But like, does seeing the celebrations from afar, does it make you sort of miss the playing days, the camaraderie, the dressing room?
Yeah, I think you've got that little window there of, I don't know, a few hours that might be extending a little bit today, I think. But it's very special. And particularly, I think, for this group, it's been well reported. A few of the concerns and a few players, very publicly challenged around you know, where a lot of people thought they were at. And I think what you saw in a lot of the celebrations was an outpouring of that. But I think what it also showed was so much of that stuff was purely external, and internally, I think there was a really strong belief right from day one.
Bales, like there's a speaking of external views, like there's a common perception that like a lot of other international teams have really sophisticated analytics and structures, and you know they can write books about T20 cricket, and Australia's just a bunch of big talented units with levers, you know, who take the Ferrari out of the garage every year or two, and that's why we get our success, you know. Like, is there any truth to that, or is there a lot of analytics and strategy and planning that goes behind Australia's tournament victory?
Oh, we like to think so, but I don't know if it's as sophisticated. I don't know what other teams do, but no doubt there's there's so much data, isn't there? So how you want to use it is really important. I was really confident of the talent in the group. I think looking back a month ago, and by no means was it an ideal lead up. My only real concern was how quickly we could build a bit of a sense of team. That's probably that group individually very, very talented, but just how they actually fit and molded the roles together, the individual roles into what that would look like as a team was going to be really crucial. And I think Finchie's done that particularly well. I think the coaching staff did that particularly well around allocation of roles and just clarity for players, who weren't even in the squad or in the 11 as well. So, and I think that was the bit that was the key piece of the puzzle that was going to make the difference. But let's be honest, I think the other thing you need in T20 is a little bit of luck too, and then you know how you try and justify that after the fact is up to you.
Yeah, of course. I thought Australia were favourites. can I just stick with that heading into the tournament? We were struggling, you know, lost five series in a row or something. There was a lot of public pressure on Justin Langer. A lot of, you know, it seemed to filter through that there were calls for the need to change from his side of things in terms of how he operated, and as you've rightly called out, they seem to have been able to develop a sense of team. And you mentioned Finch and the coaching staff. Like, do you know how they did that? Like, what changed, or are you not close enough?
Even just the looking back at the five series that you've lost, that's a bit of a useless stat there, isn't it? Because it was different conditions than where a lot of those series were, and it's vastly different personnel. Both hearing Finchie and Kane Williamson get asked about that pre-game about New Zealand's record against Australia in different formats in finals, and I just think all that stuff. And football teams get asked all the time, don't they? Like, who won the last? A new contest. It's a new, so all that stuff. People look for something there, but I don't think it's necessarily there. I think what the boys have done, I think it almost played into our hands a little bit in that Davey Warner and Smudger, their IPL. I think they both came in as senior players with a hell of a lot to prove. One of the success stories, and probably another one unlucky not to be named player of the tournament, along with Zamps, Joshy Hazelwood, just getting an extended run at T20, so that he's come through that IPL and really, you know, his name up in lights, which made it really hard on Kane Richardson, in many respects a little bit Ashton Agar as well. So you've got that sort of quality on the bench. So I think that drives the guys that are on the field. They know that when you've got to make decisions like leaving two of those two guys out, who I think we could have slotted into the team at various stages, and I think the result could very well have ended up the same. But those guys that are on the field have a sense of responsibility that they've been given the opportunity, and they've got to respond. So I think that's been really crucial, and I think the boys have just had a hell of a lot of fun. I know they've spent a lot of time as a group off the field together, and that's built up as well.
We're going to need a great advert at the moment for the Hobart Test match because it looks like it's absolutely pissing down behind you, Bales.
We'd play through this, I reckon.
I was really enjoying the views across the bay before, and then it's just all of a sudden it's just
gone. So, yeah, no, the leggy might struggle to hold it for a couple of hours, but
I thought you might have had a window cleaner. There's a hose just absolutely on those windows. So I'm going to ask you. I think the most satisfied person at the moment in Australian cricket might be Aaron Finch, who, in my eyes anyway, is one of Australia's best ever white ball players. And he probably hasn't had the same opportunities as what other captains might have had in terms of, I guess, the last T20 World Cup was 1997 or something. He had the 2019 World Cup. But, I mean, he's a guy who's led Australia for the last few years, but he hasn't quite had the opportunity to win a big tournament. And I know he hasn't had, personally, his highest ever, run aggregate series or whatever, but he must be so satisfied right now to win a tournament for Australia.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, he's worked very, very hard, and there's as far as captaincy goes, I don't think there's any there's no more difficult format than T20 because each decision has such huge ramifications. And the planning that you do pre-game, I guess a lot of that is under the assumption that you'll get the game on your terms. Mm. And we know that once the game kicks off, there's so many times where that's not the case, and so he's constantly having to think on his feet. Clearly, going in with the four out and out bowlers and using our all rounders who are I think underutilized. I think they're all vastly good bowlers, and the fact we hardly used or didn't use Stoin at all, I think, for the tournament, speaks volumes. But the way he managed those and was constantly shifting and trying to work out the best times to use his quicks, obviously having Zamps bowl as well as he did, Hoff fantastic. I just think that the balance of that bowling group was outstanding. So I think Finchie's done an amazing job, and, I certainly hope he is feeling very, very satisfied. Mm.
Bales, I have to ask you about the Bison, Mitch Marsh. He has the hot hand. He's a guy that was identified extremely early in Australian cricket as somebody who could take us forward across all three formats. Such a talented player, and I think everybody is so pleased to see him actualise, on the biggest stage and lead us to victory in the biggest game in T20 cricket. What kind of weight do you put on a performance like that vis-a-vis the Ashes and Red Bull cricket? He's got runs at that level as well against England. Do his performances in this tournament mean much for when you guys sit down and talk about what we're going to do for the Ashes?
Well, I think firstly, he's probably the great example of he probably epitomises, I reckon, what the group were looking to sort of achieve as a collective. I think he's one who wants to express himself on the field and then relax and enjoy himself off the field and sort of remove the burden of expectation. And I thought the start of his innings absolutely summed that up. I mean, that was pretty incredible. And you obviously don't get the appreciation, but Adam Milne is quick. And for Mitch to do that was a huge, I just think must have given the boys on the sideline so much confidence of what was to come. I don't know how much it'll actually have an effect on the Ashes. What it's great. What I know about Mitch Marsh over a long period of time is that when he's feeling confident, when he's playing really well, that's a really important time as to make hay while the sun shines with him and capitalize on that. So I think he's in a great place. I think he's going to have a huge couple of years ahead of him, and fingers crossed that's across a number of formats because he's someone that, as we know, you won't find a player in Australia who does not love crossing the line and playing cricket with him, touring with him, having him around the group. So, everyone's so thrilled for him.
Mm. So obviously a guy who's been down to Tassie for a number of years, Matty Wade. when you're sort of picking the squad, I know you're not picking the starting 11, Bales, but you know, when you're picking your squad, it felt a bit like with Wade, who hasn't got a great record down at seven, he's sort of all his runs have been in the top three in the Big Bash and for Australia previously. It felt a bit like square peg, round holesy, but he must have exceeded all expectations for what he's done down at seven. I mean, he's essentially, he was in the huge partnership against South Africa, which essentially gets us through the finals, and then just about single-handedly wins the game against Pakistan. I mean, I'm not sure if you would see that coming. You might believe in him, but, I mean, he must have exceeded all expectations from a selection point of view to do that at seven when he hasn't done it before.
Yeah, I think he has done it before. That was one bit of data we saw at some stage. Can't remember where it went, but he's got an extraordinary record against pace at the back end.
Okay.
And I reckon someone will go and look that up, which would be good, but he, you know, if you can get him in at, people talk about the number that people bat in T20, and it's almost completely wrong. It's about the time that people bat. And in an ideal world, Matty Wade at seven, you want him exposing sort of 17, 18 onwards, when traditionally you get a lot of the fast bowling. And that Pakistan game was, I think, the perfect example of that. And that doesn't take away anything from, you know, some extraordinary, but the skill set that you sort of need there, you want players who can hit fast bowling, and the other shot that he has that's bloody handy there is a lap,
yeah.
And we know he can play that, and he's been able to play that for a long time. So, I love all that stuff. It's like we seem to be the only team that cops stick for playing players in a position that they don't play in the Big Bash. But I see England do it a lot. You know, Bairstow moves around the order. I've seen Stokes open. I've seen Livingston bat in all sorts of positions. And rather than, I know the players don't complain about it, but rather than hear, you know, all the reasons why it can't happen, they're just adaptable and they make the most of any situation. Daryl Mitchell's semi-final, here's a bloke who's never opened besides a couple of games, I think, for Middlesex earlier. And that proves to be a masterstroke. It's a format where, the role is so important, and the skill set is so important. And I don't think it necessarily is like Test cricket where, you know, he's an opener and he doesn't bat at six, or, you know, I think that's just how it works.
Yeah.
So anyway, what's the team for the Ashes? No. people have noted the other day, George, that you made a comment about Marcus Harris being, close to the opener spot or locked in. I probably should have the quote here. Someone will look that up.
Open the bowling as well. That was most surprising.
I thought I put a few more probabilities and hopefulties and things in there than that was reported. But, yeah, anyway, people ran with that, didn't they?
Did they? Okay, well, yeah. That was kind of the basis of the question. Yeah. But if you're sort of caveating it, then the question actually becomes dissolved. So I wanted to know whether, like, those comments were – I actually quite like them because I think someone was talking on commentary tonight or this morning, whatever it was, about how players can play well when they feel security within a side. They feel secure in there, whether it's, you know, via selectors or they know that they're okay. I wondered whether – that might have been the approach with Marcus Harris, and just saying, look, there's going to be a lot of conjecture about who's opening the batting. You've been the best domestic player. You're going to get the gig for the first couple of tests, but it sounds like you're not really doing that at all.
it always staggers me that what role outside of cricket, any role in the world that the people working, would they not like to feel like that they're backed in and supported, and that their teammates or their bosses think that they can do the job. So I don't think athletes or cricketers are any different on that front.
Wow, Marcus Harris, the captain. That's interesting. Wow, okay, yeah, yeah, right. That's wow, good. That's
have you good. Seen him? Have you seen him keep?
Good gloves.
Okay. Thanks for enduring that, George Bailey. And, you know, look, you're too humble to say it, but there are a lot of people, you know, success does have many fathers, but you have come in and very quietly helped assemble a side that was playing freely. And I think a lot of credit goes to you for this victory. And obviously you guys have a lot of analytics and sophistication happening behind the scenes, but it just happens to be that other teams get all the plaudits for that. So congratulations on the tournament win. Obviously we'll steam through to the Ashes and we'll get you on ahead of time just to tell us the 11.
I appreciate we getting through that and not talking about the toss, winning the toss. Pretty
Thank you very much. To Bales. GB.
GB.
Now Pez.
He's got a beautiful, for those watching on YouTube, just the symmetry of his smile.
He's looking in nick.
He's in good nick.
He's in good nick.
Yeah, I thought he was pushing that chest out a little bit, just with the Cricket Australia kit on as well.
Yeah. Now, speaking of good nick, we're about to speak to Brad Haddon.
More nick.
But before then, we're going to thank our dear sponsors, Budgie Smuggler.
Yep.
BudgieSmuggler.com. Use the code CHAMP at checkout. What are we talking about today, Sam Perry?
Well, free custom design. So a couple of ideas for your design. Here goes. So, I mean, I'm calling this, and the Aussies are disputing this. I'm calling it unlikely victory, this tournament.
Who's disputing that?
The Australians.
The Australian players?
Yeah.
It's an unlikely victory.
Well, they're saying, a lot of them have said, look, a year ago we were ranked number one in T20s and we went into the last T20 right. World Cup as a world, you know, number one ranked side.
I can see that.
And the Ferraris hadn't got together. Because now Ferraris get together things. Yes. The wild horses from the man from Snowy
Stallions.
River. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They hadn't got together.
Okay, I can see that.
So they're like, well, actually, we're a little bit better than – you know, also, we were written off.
What professional athlete says like, yeah, actually, we are pretty ordinary.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're actually not a great outfit.
Cannot believe we've won this.
And I'm going to say it publicly as well.
So I'm thinking about unlikely victories, unlikely military victories, like the Battle of Gravier Inn.
Yeah, Gravier Inn. I was actually going to say that one.
It was fought between the Greek revolutionaries and the Ottoman Empire during the Greek War of Independence. Mm. And, a group of 120 men repulsed an Ottoman army numbering 8,000 men.
Mm.
Right? And
yeah, that's right.
That was like the crowd of Australia v. Pakistan.
In terms of the... In terms of empires having legacies, like an Ottoman is not a great legacy to... you know, fall back on. It's like, what are they remembered for? It's a lovely couch. Couch accessory. The Ottoman Empire.
I wish I could... I mean, the Ottoman Empire really rolls off the tongue,
doesn't it?
The Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
There's a battle of Longwala as well, which saw 4,000 Pakistani soldiers and 40 tanks. Nope, I'm just reading this off Wikipedia and that's 150 Indian troops.
Yeah, throw me that hospital
pass. With a detachment of 10 camels and one jeep.
Bought a jeep.
The Indian troops used subterfuge, stringing barbed wire and putting up minefield markers. Yeah, okay. A couple of other ones as well.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just
a couple of ideas. You want to put them on your budgie smugglers? Yeah. It goes into Fuck India. Hell. Well, it's just a historical fact.
Yeah.
I guess history is written by the winners. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Rorke's Drift, he goes. One of the most famous unlikely victories saw just over 150 British and colonial troops successfully defend a farmhouse against an intense assault by 3,000 to 4,000 Zulu warriors in 1879. Ah, I'm sure they had some weapons or something.
Yeah.
At that point. They're all things you can put on your budgie smugglers.
A couple of units.
Yeah, exactly.
Weapon this bloke. Who's this fucking weapon?
All ideas.
They're just ideas, just thought custom, starters.
Exactly. You know, it says nothing wrong in brainstorming. I reckon there's plenty you could say
heaps,
wrong.
Yeah,
there's plenty bit, you could yeah. say wrong in brainstorming.
Yeah. Nietzsche had that problem.
I may have done it,
yep.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So take that take that to the ideas bank.
Yep.
And get your custom designs going at budgiesmuggler.com.
Here's Brad Haddon. Baby, I don't need you. I don't need. I just want to freak you.
You were free too. That's right. What's 2 plus 2? 3, 2. Boys.
It's cathartic in some way, or therapeutic or something. Remedial even. About just hearing boys, the satisfaction of that.
Do you feel like there's a certain pitch you have to hit with boys? You get it wrong, so it's like,
oh. Are you prepared for people on the street for the rest of your life to yell at boys at you? You can't tell me people all around the globe now are just when they walk into a room and scream that out, a la Brendan Julian did that time.
Boys. Boys! Boys!
I hope our female listeners can appreciate that as well, though they might think, blokes are a bit weird, aren't they?
Well, when we thought about who we wanted to talk to following Australia's World Cup win against New Zealand, there was only one man that came into our head. And we thought, well, this is the guy that understands what it means to beat New Zealand in a World Cup final. And it's our great pleasure to welcome Brad Haddon to the Grey Cricketer. Hads, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I tell you what, I feel privileged to be on today. What a success that was overnight. We had the only piece of silverware we didn't have in our cupboard, mate, and the boys would be enjoying that now, as all Australians are.
Oh, no, we were just saying earlier on another show, it's bedlam here in South Yarra, soy lattes everywhere. And, you've been there before. You've won a World Cup against New Zealand, and we were just sort of discussing this off air, you know, what would Mitch Marsh be doing right now in Dubai?
You know what? We talk a lot about the game, the first ball six by Mitch Marsh, how he dominated with power through the middle, David Warner's classy tournament. But I reckon the fun will start now with Mitch Marsh. I've got a group of mates, mate, they're cricket lovers, but they're Mitch Marsh fans. And not just because of what he does on the cricket field or what he didn't do on the cricket field in the past, but after they watched a documentary and they just said, I would like to have a beer with Mitch Marsh. Yeah. So for those guys out there now who probably have left work already at the Woolwich Pier Hotel just enjoying Mitch Marsh's success themselves.
I just thinking Hads, like, they won the game, he was in, and I thought I saw a glint in the eye of Mitch Marsh. There was something took over him there. We were saying he sort of sounded like the Nutri-Grain man. He looked like he was there just yelling out there. But I just got a feeling is it likely that he will be best on ground?
I think that they're only fighting for points two and one. I reckon he'll get 3 points no matter what. But what a tournament it's been, though. All the pressure with this team leading in, all the chat about Justin Langer and his relationship with the players, it was interesting because, to me, that played out a lot in the media before they had the chance to look each other in the eye and talk what they needed to talk about. And the way this team's played tournament play has been outstanding. They've peaked at the right time. So, mate, there'll be a couple of best on ground at the moment. Mm. I reckon Warner, March, all the cheeky ones. Maxwell would be there doing things only at one pace, 100 miles an hour. Josh Hazel would be sitting in the corner slowly sipping his schooners of new. But they'll be having a good time.
I remember in 2015, you guys actually broke the World Cup trophy itself. So if they go anywhere close to that, then it'll be a good time. I want to ask you, Hads, about... I want to ask you, in terms of, like, matchups. Now, we know New Zealand is such a great team and have been for the better part of, like, the last decade, really. But there's something about the big brother nurse, the Australia-New Zealand relationship, the dynamic. Like, when you guys matched them up in 2015, like, New Zealand won in New Zealand in the group stage, right? But then Australia got over the line in the final. And just felt like when you saw that New Zealand had made it, then Australia made it, just felt like, nah, we'll just beat them. You know what I mean? Like, do you feel that?
Yeah, it's interesting. But I know they beat us in the round stages of the 2015 World Cups, but previous to that, we'd had a really good record against New Zealand in World Cup matches and in big semi-finals. And that does, as much as people say, it does play on your mind. You just look at South Africa in World Cup events. They've led into a lot of tournaments, ranked number one in the world, but just not been able to get over in finals. So, to me, I was excited about this game. New Zealand match up against us really well. So it was a really interesting match up leading in. But, yeah, it's just that little confidence you get knowing in the back of your mind that you can beat this team on the big stage. Mm.
Hads, I know you've been involved intimately in the Australian cricket team and in Justin Langer's regime as well. That, you know, the side seemed to play with a sense of freedom following some conversations between them. You said they eyeballed each other and stuff like that. I mean, have you observed any change in the side that, you know, may be the result of a change in coaching approach to JL? And does that therefore mean that, you know, everyone was doing their job, and if it means that Australia's playing better cricket, then let's all move forward together?
Yeah, I think a really interesting moment in this tournament, and we've seen some really good coaching, was the Bangladesh game. I think before that we had to get the run rate up. We had to play attacking cricket. It just looked like the shackles had been taken off, and this team said, okay, we've only got to play one way to go through the tournament, and that's exactly what they did. A lot of energy came off the back there of Davey Warner. I think as the tournament went on, he started to play some outstanding cricket. But even looking at Jay on the sideline, he looked like he was enjoying the matches. From even the start of the tournament right to the back end, he was sitting there with a smile on his face. And the guys played like that. They played a freestyle sort of game, which was attractive to watch. Mitch Marsh, to hit that first ball for six in a final like he did, just shows they're in the right mindset to win those matches.
Mm. You obviously spent some time in the UAE just recently, and you're with the Sunrisers setup, and we saw what happened with Dave Warner being dropped. I'm not sure if that was like an ownership thing or a tactics thing or whatever that was, but we were sort of watching the IPL, and looking how Davey was batting, it looks like it might have been heading towards the end, and he comes out and he's got second leading run score in the tournament. He gets man of the tournament. I mean, like what happened between the backstage of the IPL in the UAE to this Dave Warner? They're two different players.
Yeah, I tell you what, it wasn't a cricket decision he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
yeah. But I think the one thing you got to realise with Davey, he wasn't out of form. He was just out of match practice. They had a long break through COVID. He didn't go to the West Indies or Bangladesh. But he turned up in really good headspace. He was hitting the ball well. Circumstances out of all of our controls, or even the coaching staff, for some reason he didn't play. So, but it wasn't because he was out of form. So all he needed was some match time. He's hitting the ball well. He just needed to spend some time out in the middle to get the rhythm of the game again. And as the tournament went on, you seen his class. His class shone through. He got a bit of rhythm back into his game because he hadn't been playing for a while. And it was good to watch. He looked like he fed a lot off batting with Mitch Marsh as well. Mm-hmm. I think they enjoyed each other out at the other end. So, yeah, he's been playing well for some time. He just needed to get some rhythm in playing some matches.
Mm.
Hads, you know, if you rewind a week ago, 10 days ago, we were all the consumers of the UK cricket press saying that, well, you know, England's juggernaut and momentum will continue on to the Ashes.
Yeah,
you know, they'll get this white ball title, great white ball setup, and maybe that will mean something heading over to Australia. Does the reverse now apply? And on that front, you just mentioned Mitch Marsh. You know, is he in calculations now because he's got the hot hand, or we just need to cool our jets on that?
I think his name will come up in the conversation. I don't know if you remember back to 2014 Ashes here where we won 5-0. George Bailey had an amazing 12 months in the white ball, so he hadn't had the opportunity to play much four-day cricket. And the selectors went with their gut and picked George then at number six. He played a big role for us through that series, and maybe it might go on a gut feel with Mitch Marsh as well. There's a number six spot up for grads. I imagine his name will come up just because the style of the game he's playing at the moment. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. If England had a one, I'd have said, momentum, nah, it's a different form of the game. Now that Australia have won, I said, oh, yeah, take all the momentum out of that and into this test match. So, but they can. They'll take confidence out of this. But it's going to be a massive summer, mate. The theatre behind an Ashes campaign, as you know, is different to anything else. Ben Stokes adds another element, I think. Not only just his batting and bowling, but the presence he gives. I think he's a real good 2IC to Joe Root. And as you know, the captain's under a lot of pressure in the England team when they come to Australia. So I think Ben Stokes is a huge in.
Mm. Just let's put ourselves in the wicketkeepers' brotherhood and the union. That's a way of such a good bond, Hads, because you know we both kept so admirably for Australia. Matthew Wade may well have played his last game for Australia, which is crazy given what he just did in the last game. Literally got Australia over the line with that amazing, especially last three balls, but 41 of 17, incredible. But he's probably unlikely to get another go in the Test setup. The next T20 World Cup's less than a year away, which is crazy, but. I know, like in your career, you sort of got better as you got older, and Matt Wade has almost accelerated in his career as well, in the sort of similar stage. But as a former wicketkeeper of Australia yourself, you must be so happy for Matt Wade because he's been such a great player.
Well, I think you just have to look at a couple of things with Matty Wade. The first game, he got us over the line against South Africa. He came out under pressure in that tight first game, and playing in tournament play like World Cup, the first game's always the important one because you need to get that momentum. It takes a lot of anxiety out with the scoreboard or the points table, sorry, if you win that first game. Then we were gone against Pakistan. And the way he came out and delivered under pressure was exactly what you want your wicketkeeper to do. You don't often get a hit much during 2020 tournaments, but he had two hits and he made the difference in the game. And the one thing he did do also, he, at times he's come under a lot of criticism for his keeping. I thought he was tight. He had that one chance he put down off Zampa off the hat-trick ball, which they'll sort out now over a couple of beers, I'd imagine. But I thought his keeping was really tidy. He did exactly what you wanted the keeper to do. He gave a little bit of shit when he needed to. Yeah. He got tough runs. So, yeah, I think he'll be there for the 2020 World Cup here at home.
Okay. Mm.
Hads, I was going to ask you another question. I'll do that next. But just can we stick on Matthew Wade for a second? Like, it occurs to me that we, Australia, have always been good up the top, you know, with the hard ball in the power play, and even Wade is a top order bat. And, you know, as T20 has evolved, I sense that a lot of the analysts within T20, and you'd be around a lot of them, as Sunrisers, etc., will start to demonstrate or explain how different a finishing role or a middle overs role is to a top order role. What does it say about Matt Wade that he's been dropped into that role at number seven and has basically won crucial games for Australia that have enabled them to win the tournament?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a huge role now too in the short form. There's, you got your top order, you got your middle, and you got your finishers. But these finishers have to practice a different skill set. And I'll tell you that the innings he played against Pakistan, he had a Freddie bowl in 147. They had fine leg up. He thought, okay, he's going to go full. So he's ramped it and it's gone for six. Next ball, they move fine leg back. And you think, okay, he's over correct. He's gone too full. He's back of a length and he's opened his foot up and hit it six over square leg. All that comes down to a lot of analytics he would have done. He's a student of the game. He's a tough competitor, but he would have watched the field and he would have taken a 50-50 gamble where that ball's going to go. But to execute it under pressure, mate, that's what I'm liking about him. It's a tough role to play. And they're putting him in there because he's got good cricket smarts.
Hads, last one, and we'll let you go. I know you'll be a man in demand today, but I noticed on Instagram, and you're not expecting this question, but I just wanted to say you look amazing. You're looking great, Nick, and I know that you're actually undergoing a November shred at the moment. And yeah, nice. I just wondered if you could talk us through it because I need one.
Mate, yeah. I'm not going to talk about the shred today because Australia have just won the World Cup, so we're actually going to go
the window.
Down to the Woolwich Pier, probably have some wings and 35 schooners with my mates and just enjoy Mitch's Masters' success. So, mate, all that goes out the window. That's why the shred happens, doesn't it? For these events, they just go, you know what, everything's out the window. I'm going to enjoy Australia's win.
And is it a day where you go down to Woolwich Pier with the ODI jersey, hat on the back, baggy green? Like, what's the setup you're going for? Yeah.
The setup, no, I'll just be casual. I'll probably have the Akuba on so I don't get burnt fair skin and sitting on the balcony just – looking over the water, just reminiscing. And I know my mates will be sitting there probably now just saying, I knew Mitchell Marsh, we stuck on him long enough, you come good in a big stage. And you know what? We're going to enjoy it today.
Yeah. Brad Haddon, I'll let you go to the Woolwich Pier. Thanks for enjoying. Enjoy that and thanks for coming on.
Anytime. Thank you.
And thank you to Hads, a dear friend. Second time the show?
He was on one of the very early episodes of TGC.
Maybe like single digits.
In person.
That's right.
In person.
That's right. I asked him for gloves then. Oh, I should have done it again. Damn it. The Ashes is a thing that is next on the calendar for us. We asked George Bailey just then about his comments, and which sort of inferred that Marcus Harris was going to be in. And he just...
He seemed to sort of... He all but confirmed it on a radio show, and I think he was trying to, add in a few more caveats and probablys and nothing that's kind of mandatory there. But it sounds like Harris is in. I mean, I like I said on the show, like, I don't mind it. I don't mind him just saying it and quelling all speculation on that and saying, Harry, the first shot's yours.
There's no problem with that. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's what they think's going to happen. Mm. Yeah, and then now he goes, it's about the 1v2s game they're playing. They're doing 1v2s.
Right, okay. So there's a whole bunch of bowlers which look pretty good. And it's interesting. It's interesting in this context that Pattinson is not going to be – well, he's removed himself from chance of selection, which is interesting because they've announced they've sort of committed to the idea of rotating the quicks, which makes sense entirely. And I would have thought he would have been next cab, as he always has been for the last like 5-6 years when he's been fit anyway. But now it's like Boland's a bit of a bolter, Scott Boland. Then there's Jai Richardson. There's Mark Steckity. There's a bunch of guys who are taking like bulk wickets in the Shield, sort of replacing the – well, first names in the team sheet. Lyon's first name in the team sheet probably is the bowlers. And then it's going to be Hazelwood, Cummins. Stark is probably the first one to cycle out. But I think Stark would be – if he's not in pen for the first test, he's in 2B pencil.
And it's funny how we talk about rotating. Like, we saw the India series last summer, and it was clear in hindsight that they should have rotated.
Hindsight's the operative word.
I empathise with Langer's comments that you weren't going to keep those quicks out of that final game at the Gabba because they are a unit.
Yeah.
Fucking Captain Planet shit, actually. But.
if you dropped Stark that last game, it would have been like, wow, that's a big call.
That's right, except that theoretically you can see now how tired that you know they actually all were.
And Stark was going through stuff with his dad at the time as well.
Exactly right, but I still feel like when it comes to the game and the, you know, the horses are in the stables.
Yeah, nice.
You know, they're coming to the gate.
Yeah.
They'll find it hard to tell one of those quicks they ain't playing.
Yeah.
The Ashes. Even Stark, who it would be the guy you'd cycle out only because Cummins and Hazelwood, you just cannot preclude them from playing at this point in time. Stark's the one whose form seems the most open to imbalance.
Yes.
And if that's the case, I mean, for me, like we weren't sure if Jai Richardson would be available, but he's gone and taken a boatload of wickets and looked a class above. Mm. And I think they've got, speaking of 2B, I mean, I think he's a next cab longer term for the side. Then a lot of talk about Scott Boland at the moment as well. He's bowling really well.
Yep.
He's a guy who would just do an incredible job on a flat wicket. Yep. I know the MCG is meant to be decent now, but... you know, Jackson Bird got that back-breaking job a couple of years ago. He'd go and break your back on this and save one of the quicks. I mean, Boland on a flat wicket would do an incredible job as well.
Is he quick enough? I've never seen him.
He's up there, yeah.
Okay.
He's up there.
And then there's Nisa as well, of course.
Nisa has just waited and waited and been very patient, and I wouldn't be surprised if Langer wanted to reward him as well. But, there's no shortage of quicks, basically. I think they're okay on that front.
Yeah.
And then who else have they got here? He goes for this 1v2s game.
Yeah. Do you know when that is?
No.
Or where it is?
Nope.
Yeah, someone else does. Sorry. I don't know either. Sorry. I threw him the bus there.
But, I mean, Sean Abbott as well. Nick Maddison's going to play in that game. It looks like the only thing they need to sort out now is who's going to bat five, which seems to be between a three-way race between Maddison, Khawaja, and Travis Head. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they just went with the convention and went with Head. You know, they see him as a longer term player. I think a lot of people still think that there's a career there for Travis Head, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went with him there.
Mate, do you know what? I can see it. I can so see it with Travis Head. You know, like he's got all the tools. He's already had some undulations in his pretty. Oh, he's played a lot of tests, but he was like, didn't he captain an ODI game for Australia? He was at least ODI vice captain for a period of time.
People get so
frustrated.
And then
he fell out of that. And then he's never been the sort of T20 in the T20 setup. But like he's been the guy for Australia batting at five for ages. And it's just.
They want it and they need it.
He scored those 100 against New Zealand in that series when Australia won 3-0. But then, you know, it's so hard to score runs in England. But he didn't do it there. And Wade scored 200s in that series. And then Wade's obviously way down the list now. But, you know, and then there's a sort of Khawaja who's 34, 35, and it's like, okay, he might have like 2 years left. Whereas Travis Head's got the age advantage there. Maddison, I think, is 30.
29, I think. Okay. Yeah, 20.
So he's got a bit more time on his side as well. You know, he's a potential guy, but he's another guy that they like. But, you know, I guess all I'm saying is I can see it with Head, and I can see the potential of what that leads to because he's captain South Australia. He captained when he was like 21, didn't he? Captain super young. So he can be a guy who's a future captain as well for Australia, but he needs to score the runs first, and he just hasn't done it.
Would you use an Ashes series to continue the development of a player, or do you need finished articles? Can Australia carry someone who you're still pushing along? I mean, the best result for Australia would be to get Travis Head in this series and for him to succeed because I think there are worries about the Australian batting unit post Smith and Warner. Smith's got a few years left. Warner's 35.
Yeah.
But after that, there's a bit of a drop-off. You've got Marnus. You've got Cameron Green coming through. Wilpakovsky, we're unsure.
Yeah.
You know, they'd love Travis Head to come and shore up that middle order as well. But and I wouldn't be surprised if they did go with him. I think pound for pound right now, if it's just gun to your head, who's going to score the most runs in this series, Khawaja's got the hot hand and he's the best bat. And it looks so I'd probably pick him, to be honest.
He probably saw more runs than Marcus Harris as well.
Yeah, it's at the top, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's interesting with Warnie. Would Warner play, would he go to England in 2 years' time? I mean, it's jumping so far ahead.
Isn't it?
But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Do you use a home Ashes series to future-proof?
Mate,
or is it a team for now? Because then you start talking about Mitch Marner. There's all sorts of guys who are like, you know, well, who's the future selection?
Mate, four years ago, last time the Ashes were here, so long ago, you think about what that team was. Bancroft opened the batting just before going to South Africa. Mitch Marsh is in the team. Shaun Marsh is in the team. And, like, Mitch Marsh scores 183 in Perth against England. Then he scores 100 at the SCG. Mate, he might not be that far away. I mean, I think he's...
Bailey was very... He was very careful with his comments about that. He just, when we asked him, he was just saying, "I'm glad to see that he's going well. Yeah. You know, I think it's gonna be good for him over the next few years." But he didn't want to put too much weight on it right now.
It'd be funny if he just goes, "Nah."
Yeah. If you're listening, Mitch, you haven't played enough first class cricket. Very different thing. It's La Nina, Anderson. It's a whole thing.
Mitch Marsh? No.
I'm excited for whoever they pick at five. To be honest.
Big one for Cam Green as well this summer. I mean, he's just a lock. Cam Green's a lock.
Yeah,
and
you're not sure.
It's funny because he actually could play lock for rugby, but could do anything.
The old lock, like number eight, or actually in the second row.
He's probably second row, isn't he? Yeah, line out.
He could be a big number eight.
He could do anything. Banking, finance, daddy daycare,
a bit of Sydney stuff.
But yeah, it's funny because like Australia hasn't played a test since the Gabba when it was back in January. But like he's just so I've hardly seen him play. I guess there's some white ball stuff, and he's back in the Shield, and he's done okay. Seen some great cricket highlights of him hitting sixes against 12-year-olds. But
He needs 100.
He needs 100.
And when we win tournaments like this, we can start being very greedy and demanding of our players again. Yeah. I mean that's just
you must
safety.
Be Flintoff.
Whereas you get 100 in the first four innings of this series, or I'm going to start talking about your position in the side.
Be Flintoff, but have way better numbers than him. Like, way better.
Taller, faster, better numbers.
Yep.
Do it all over the world.
Yep.
Come on our show. Be funny.
Be charismatic.
Be charismatic.
Kind of go with it a bit. Like,
give us a whole piece of yourself that others can relate to, but also be a bit of a robotic kind of superstar as well, who's cut above everybody
sort
else.
Sort of laugh with yourself, laugh about yourself, and sort of give a bit, but don't give too much. Yeah. Like, just be a little bit distant.
That's right, earn heaps of money in the IPL or whatever, but don't like walk with kings, not lose a common touch sort of thing. But if you see us, like, know our names. But also,
it's quite a few boxes of tick there.
Oh, your captaincy thing as well, so you're good with the other players also.
Yeah. Just keep yourself out of trouble as well. Get a nice watch.
That's all.
That's Chris Green.
He goes, you see that for some reason, we didn't talk about this on the agenda, I just picked it up, but the Perth test is still firming. What the fuck's going on with this, mate? Something's going on.
Mate, there's a 4-day chess going on. Make any sense.
It's got to... Okay, I'll just read this out.
Read it out.
Got a theory. Perth's desperation to host a fifth test could extend to an extraordinary proposal to immediately change the ball whenever it's hit for six.
Oh, yeah, this shit. Yeah.
Western Australia is confident the test will be officially signed off on as early as next week, which is this week, under a revamped 5-day quarantine proposal allowing players from England and Australia to train and play during that time frame. However, a key part of the proposal would dictate that players would not be able to have any contact with fans, which according to reports in the West Australian newspaper means balls into the crowd for six may have to be replaced. A couple of days after this, they interviewed Sock about BBL. So I don't want to go over there. So I have to go over there. I have to get in a hotel. Mark McGowan doesn't like us. We don't like him. You know, fair play to WA people, but I don't want to go. This is so funny. He goes wouldn't the England players just kick off about this and say, Australia.
Mate, imagine if it's, let's say it's 3-1. Let's say it's 3-0. Let's say it's 4-0. It ain't going to be 2-2. I'll give you the tip. Like, they've had enough.
Not anymore. Not after last night.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't
sure. Carry the momentum in,
Yeah, exactly.
Are they going to be up for a fucking... Like, they've been all over the world. You can't exaggerate how much cricket and how much bubbling they've had this year. They come to Australia. It's fucked here for them. They hate it. They're tired. Long Ashes series, the press, all that stuff.
Wear coats.
Do you want to go to Perth and get bounced out for 4 days?
And stay on the same level of your hotel and change balls every time he gets hit for six? Or some weird fucking other country shit?
I don't understand. And also, McGowan got in just in political sense, like he was voted in because of his, like part of the reason I think was what I've read anyway, is that he was so strict with like the, you know, the, and with like the quarantines and that kind of shit. And like, so that's what his population wants.
I want to see.
But they also want a game of cricket.
I want to see the ball carry. Like, don't. Like,
oh, yeah. It's going to go through the chest.
I'm weighing this up against the way the ball carries.
I want it through the chest.
The heel of the light.
Yeah.
And the sound of the crowd and just people's arms are bigger and thicker in WA. I want to see that.
Mate.
As a fifth test, I'd like it to be 4-0. Yeah. And I'll see some thick tanned arms.
Mate, I want desperation in the eyes where it's 4-0 leaving Sydney and they go, where's next?
Oh, I want a tribute leg spinner picked.
Yeah.
By England.
He doesn't really, like Liam Livingston plays.
Exactly. Yeah,
Liam Livingston, they fly him over, bowl leg spin.
A bit of a novelty thing for the English people to talk about. Yeah. I want all of that, but at the same time, it doesn't seem to make sense because you've got to basically tunnel your way there like Steve McQueen and not see anybody.
Yeah.
It doesn't make, like, I don't get it.
But I don't get it either.
It must be. Here's a theory of mine is that, like, it seems, I have no idea about any of this sort of stuff, so I'm speaking in high themes. Yeah, just go for it. That's all right. There's not many people listen.
Yeah.
Is, like with the England-India stuff, there was a few, like when India went home, there was a little bit of posturing straight after the decision because there were insurance or legal issues at play. So I wonder if every party needs to represent that that they want the game to be on because whomever cuts it.
Right.
Doesn't lose whatever they stand to lose shit.
Fun little game.
Yeah, and I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, with no...
No, I just wonder whether that's what's going on because we just... Everyone, I feel like, is just hearing these reports and people are going, no, it's on, and Christina Matthews, who did great work at my cricket club, Balmain, many, many years ago, administrator,
Is
just like, oh, good luck, Tassie. You know, Tassie's written, saying, well, we'll do it.
Waste of ink or something.
Oh, some shit. Yeah, we've got the test and...
Yeah.
It's just like, you've got to quarantine for 14 days and you don't want anyone to come. Also, so why do you want something?
The gap between when the Sydney test will finish and when the next is like 4 days.
Yeah.
So how do...
Who's pulling the pin here? Like who's just going to pull
India are involved. India doing something.
Well, can India get involved?
Is it the IPL?
Like again, I want it through the chest. But if McGowan's you've got to quarantine 14 days, how's it work? There's only a couple days.
I love Perth as a place. The times we've been there, awesome.
Yeah.
I love the lifestyle.
I love flying over the desert. It makes me feel safe.
It feels fucking good. I like watching on TV. The Wacker, what a great ground. Optus Stadium, great ground. All of it's good. There. Looks hot. We win. It feels good. I love the people. All good. But I don't get it. What are we missing?
Paws stand up at the carry of the ball.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like your paws stand up.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm getting rock hard off something else.
Off something else.
Off something else. Right. Yep. The net's at the back.
the entire aesthetic.
Joel Paris. Yeah,
the whole aesthetic of Perth and cricket in Perth and WA
is
about as good as it gets. Mm. Now that the GAB has actually fallen over, I'd probably turn my attention to Perth. Same. Like that's the safer thing. Same. It's like, nobody can do anything to us in Perth.
No, unless you're South Africa.
I just don't want people to be unhappy. It's like, why do you have to, I don't know. Oh, I saw there's some fourth wave shit going on in Europe though, so I don't know.
Yeah. four tests. Just be four tests.
I guess so. England will kick off.
Okay. Is there anything else to talk? I was talking about the Sheffield Shield, which sort of rolls into this a bit as well. I mean, Khawaja scored more runs in a game where they were rolled. I think he got 70. The team was bowled out for like 130, 140 or something. It was doing all sorts.
He did a good 70.
Yeah. Josh Philippe, Ryan's brother, got 100. Yeah. Pattinson got a one match ban and for throwing the ball back at Dan Hughes.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little bit harsh. And he thought so as well because he posted something on Instagram.
Yeah, that was funny.
I thought he was kind of right.
Yeah.
I mean, can't both things be true? It's like, don't do that. But at the same time, was it that bad?
I felt like it was. It had the tone to me of Cricket Australia, with the best of intentions, attempting to make an example of somebody because our behaviour is our bad behaviour is basically the bedrock of poor Australian cricket culture. And so anytime a big player looks to be behaving in a kind of intimidatory or borderline violent way that they need to come down twice as hard, except that I hate to say if you've played the game thing, but that particular incident, he sort of throws it at him just a little bit off balance. It is a bit at him. like, it's not fast enough. Like, Hughes actually is through the shot trying to stop it. He just misses it. And it just happens. Like, it injures him. Or it hits him in the ankle. Mm. And, like, Pattinson apologized. Apparently, like, went off. Apparently, he was giving it to him afterwards as well. But that's sort of James Pattinson.
Yeah.
And then Pattinson highlighted times when players have thrown, and Marnus especially, yeah. You know, he's throwing the ball.
In terms of carry on and shield, mate, exactly. I've seen a lot from Marnus and a lot from Steve Smith in recent years.
I just thought it was between players and just the way, like, you know, we'll get an email alerts going like, a statement from Cricket Australia on James Pattinson's behaviour. It's like, you know, as someone who played only just grade cricket, like,
I
felt sorry for him. It's like he's fucking bowled his ring off like all day. He's fired up. He doesn't throw it hard. It's not at his head. It's low.
If that was a first grade game that happened and a bloke got a game for that, you'd be like, fucking pretty harsh. That's pretty harsh.
It was. They sort of embarrassed him a little bit about it as well. Like, that was the clip that just ran all over social media so that everyone could, like, sort of have that, you know, weigh in with their judgment about it. You know.
Yeah.
It would have been good if there were more clips of his bowling, to be honest. But that's probably not the point. But I just thought, anyway, the next game they played was a one-dayer at the MCG. They got washed out, so he hasn't really missed a game.
Oh, okay. So that was the game that, yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, well done. And then Marnus bowled Cam Green by shouldering arms. That bodes well.
You know, I really wanted Khawaja back in the side, but, like, just letting Marnus Thibashane bowl medium. I know he bowls with his grade club and stuff, but, like, he should be bowling his leggies.
Yeah.
His leggies are good.
Those are good.
Yeah. Is he about, like, I feel like when Marnus is bowling medium pace in shield cricket, he's essentially, and I suppose I respect it, but he's appropriating what we all like feeling in backyard cricket of bowling wheels into shield cricket.
Yeah.
Kind of brings it down. But then again, I guess he bowls out Flintoff, so.
Yeah. Who's got better leggies, Liam Livingstone or Marnus?
I think Marnus's leggies are good.
I think Livingstone's leggies are pretty good as well.
Yeah.
Like international
red ball league. I'm,
yeah, they're different skills.
Getting the red ball.
Different skills.
Don't talk to me. I'm not getting out of bed unless we're talking about red ball.
Not going to get out of bed. I'll have a look at an Ashes test. Watch 3 games a year. Got some strong views, though. Anything else, Pez, to talk about?
No.
Okay, cool. Let's get into hashtag RCDC. But before we do, we will not be in your ears next week. I feel like we spoke to our patrons last week and just said we're taking a couple of weeks off. It's not really time off necessarily. We've got some other commitments. We've got a big summer ahead, which is exciting. It's obviously it wasn't that long ago where the conversation, Pez, around the cricket was going to be about whether the thing was either going to be played. So it's exciting that obviously, the English players are, some of them anyway, already here. That Australia's won a trophy, that's good as well. But the fact that there's cricket going to be played, and I think there's going to be fans. I know Dan Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, is talking about having 80,000 people for Boxing Day. We'll see what happens. Because obviously, sometimes if someone sneezes, then we don't even play the games. But that's just the nature of it. But yeah, we won't be doing the show next week. We've got some other stuff to record with our network show. But we'll be back in a couple of weeks, the week before. The
week commencing 29th of November. Okay. We're back.
Okay. And then, yeah, thanks to everyone who's supported us and the patrons, especially patreon.com/greatcricketer, who's got all of our audio for the World Cup, the IPL, the other test series that have gone on. It's exciting that Australia are going to play some red ball cricket again. I'm looking forward to that. In some ways, it feels like this is the end of some cycle and the new cycle is about to be. It feels like the end of the northern summer. Somehow, even though it finished a while ago, it's now autumn there.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, well, I think for the most part, people have been out of lockdown around the world. I know we have been for now about 2 weeks, which has been wonderful. But it's been a very, I'm spitballing here, but this is something I want to say. It's been a privilege to be able to talk to people during lockdown for the last, well, I suppose it's been 2 years. It's been a pretty tough 2 years for a lot of people. And for me personally, I just want to thank everyone who's been a patron or watched a YouTube show or retweeted something or even downloaded this every week. It's been it's a privilege to talk to this amount of people every week. So, yeah, 5-0, fuck off. Oh, you're getting sincere for a second, are you? Well, okay, that's a weakness. That's quite a weakness. Okay. Alistair Woolgar. Boys, on the topic of people giving kit away, you've triggered a memory of mine and Rudy's that occurred during last year's club prizing giving. We've heard from Woolly and Rudy before. Anyway, Karori Cricket Club in Wellington was hosting an event in which all teams from first grade to park shit had a captain's speech followed by prizes for MVP and team man. Allow me to introduce our team man, Scott. A stocky outswinger, massive forearms, and an absolute heart of gold. He has mixed the confidence of Nugsy and the bullshit stories of Jay from the Inbetweeners. He also looks exactly like the late pro wrestler Chris Benoit, although Scott seems to like his family more than Chris. Midway through our fifth beers, second beers, and first shandies, Scott started his usual ramblings. I can get Panhead Brewery to sponsor us next year, Panhead being a very popular beer in NZ. My mate who used to play first class is definitely to play as a ring-in next season. I bought a whole bunch of kit from Michael Papp's brother the other day. Some of it was banned by the ICC. Did you, mate? Did you? Sure did. One of the bats was too big for David Warner to use in the IPL. It's in my car right now. Bollocks. Show us them. Sure enough, after our eighth beer, fourth, we ventured to a nearby street, dimly lit with a sense of danger lurking nearby, just to see this illegal gear in the back of the Benoit-mobile. A grey Nick's kit bag full of black market sticks. Woodworm, Mongoose, Duncan Fernley, they were all there. Rudy and I grew lightheaded as we inhaled the fresh scent of linseed oil on English Willow. We grew suspicious as we heard a rustle in the trees nearby, but it was nothing. Probably just a lost score or someone gave us a Friday night dogging. This is the bad boy I was telling you about. Scott then pulled out the biggest railway sleeper I've ever seen, complete with some grey nickels decals I'd never heard of.
What?
This is one tier down from the stuff some Indian fella from Chennai went to prison home detention for, thinking of using it next season. We're still waiting for that beer sponsor, and we wait with intrigue for this season to see how this secret illegal gear goes. Oh, crap. I shouldn't have said it was a secret. Oh, crap. I definitely should have said it was illegal. Ah, it's only T20. Wooly and Rudy.
What, two guys write this? Is this a joint operation, or has he got...
No, it was, joint operation.
I'll tell you what, like, most of the questions that come in I take as invitations to strike down, but I'm actually genuinely intrigued about this scene, you know, because, like, normally if the team man that Wooly and Rudy, whichever one, is describing is full of shit or, like, just cannot deliver on what they're talking about, but it sounds like this team man took them around the corner, dimly lit street, the full scene, and, like, opened up all this illegal kit. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, illegal cricket equipment wasn't ever a topic of discussion while we played.
Not cricket equipment.
No. Now I want to start talking about, like, how illegal can cricket equipment so be to assist you.
A bat has to be, like, the width of the thing.
But who's ever going to find out, you know? Like, if you had a bat just a little bit wider, is anyone going to say anything?
Depends how silly you can get it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's the cutoff? How silly could you get it?
Because what's the width of a bat like?
Yeah. Like, no one real. I mean, people, like, some people will know, but no one, like, officially knows. You just sort of look at it. It's just like.
Yeah. But if it was, like, a centimetre, then you wouldn't notice. If it's, like, nudging into the inches, if it's an inch thicker, like an inch wider, I reckon you might have a look. You might notice something.
It's funny. Like, we have a lot of ball tampering out there. Why not bat tampering?
Why not bat tampering?
Because I feel like when we talk about illegal bats, it's all about what the bat's made of, or, like, there's some screw inside it or something like that. Or some shit. Yeah. Something.
I do recognise the team man though, like someone at your club who is their identity is in accessing, like, top of the line, like, kit, which is a bit off market in the sense, like, I can get you a great deal on this bat.
Yeah.
And it's just from, like, Rebel Sport. But it's two toned, you see?
I just find it hard, to conceive of how good a bat can be. Like I'm just imagining holding a piece of wood where you apply force to the ball and you get an incongruous reaction from it. It almost seems to fly in the face of science, it hits wood.
Yeah, you know the fielding bats which had foam on them?
Yes.
Yeah, like the orange bat. Yeah, like
and
that.
It flies a bit. Yeah.
Because they tried that with, like, Mongoose tried that, didn't they? Where they have, like, the elongated handle and the short blade, which is supposed to give you more power.
Yeah.
Because of the weight distribution.
Or?
What, an outlawed? No, it was
just a shit bat.
It was legit. But that was the idea of, like, manipulating bat technology for advantageous exploits of batters. I don't know if it ever worked.
I feel there are certain characters in cricket clubs who would be able to pick out a bat being too wide. Like, just because it's the first guy in my head, but like the I feel like the late Dean Jones would have been quite good at seeing a bat going, that bat's not regulation size.
Yeah, because it takes a level of nuffiness.
Yes,
to like be like
I'm gonna pick up this bat and just have a look at like the next time I look at a bat, it's like, is that what are we looking at here?
Yeah.
But I feel like all bats are illegal now in a way. I know that's an old fogey thing to say. They're all big thick boys that have a sort of there's a disproportionate response when you swing it.
And it's only really bats which have that advantage. Like no one's got like gloves which are those gloves are a bit how you going. Exactly. Legal gloves.
Yeah. You punch it for four. I feel like people, again, showing age, like I do feel like guys swing bats differently now to the way they
confidence,
used to.
Definitely.
Because but the way the ball behaves off the bat, you can swing it. You can swing the bat more slowly and get more from it.
I think this is also a thing of the evolution of helmets. But like you watch how like Ian Chappell tells people to like play a hook shot, for instance, get inside it, and then like help it on its way kind of thing. No, blokes just stand there on the front foot basically and trying to hit it in front of square.
Exactly.
And it's because of the confidence of the thickness of the willow, and also if I get hit in the head, for the most part, like you're going to be okay. You know what I mean? Whereas like in those days, it's kind of, it's just a different way to play the game. But like that technical coaching of that to play that specific shot is completely different because of like the bat that he was using. He's just batting in a cap, you know?
I was just trying to think of what kind of illegal gear could assist you. Like I know like spinners used to use a certain
peptide.
There was a little ointment that you could get from the chemist that like made your fingers sticky. So the ball would like stick onto your fingers a little bit more. You'd just spend a little bit longer on the ball. It was a green thing. You used to dip your finger in it. They also used to tell you to piss on your finger. But like you say like in the there used to be rumors like in the 70s and the 80s, like the Canterbury Bulldogs in rugby league, like they had like metal inside their shoulder pads and shit.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah. I'm just not sure if you could do something like that in cricket. Obviously, you can with a ball. You can make it behave in certain ways. But what can you do? Like with a bat, the ball's coming at you. Like what can you do to give yourself an advantage? I don't really know.
I would imagine that with the stickiness of the finger thing, that thing, like you can also go like, as a spinner, you can also drag it down because it gets stuck in your hand.
Yeah. I used to have it. I don't think it was illegal. Like, and it was like a green kind of ointment, and it would actually leave green marks on your finger. But it was much better than like one of the worst things is like afternoon tea, sun's beating down, you got to put sunscreen on.
Yeah.
You get the sunscreen all over your face, and then you can't really grip the ball.
Yeah.
Then you worry about your mitts and anyway, well, didn't really know where to go with that. It just ended up becoming a really serious chat about cricket kit.
Yeah.
We do have time for another one. So Linda Wu writes in. He goes, "Dear TGC," that's a nice intro, "I am due my first child in January and my partner is coming to terms with not going to winter nets and perhaps definitely not playing both Saturday and Sunday from April to September in 2022, which made me remember my first experience of watching a village game as the only spectator, brackets not uncommon over the years to be sole spectator. Being the sole spectators meant I always got attention from teammates, etc., normally an older chap mansplaining the concept of an over to me without being promoted. But on one occasion, I wasn't quite prepared for the small talk, ... I'm sat with this older chap who was telling me he plays on the team with his son-in-law, chatting all about their wedding, etc., etc., and then explains that his daughter, wife of son-in-law currently batting, is about my size, probably a bit slimmer,
fucking hell,
but with massive boobs. Such that wedding dress shopping was problematic and he paid for a handmade dress to fit her exceptional figure of tiny waist and double D's. I wasn't prepared for this U-turn in small talk and years later I'm not sure if I feel it was sweet that this chap was so involved in his daughter's wedding and probably paid a fortune for her wedding dress. Or if it was too much information and we should have stuck to that safe subject of how much the club's new roller will cost. Which is better? I can only imagine the dad issues playing out between son-in-law and father-in-law on the same side. Currently watching England versus Sri Lanka and at 35-3, not quite as enjoyable as the Aussie game. I will never tire of hoping Justin Langer is somewhere in the world putting rubbish back into a waste bin. Linda.
Linda, congratulations on your impending first child in January. That's very exciting. Or whatever the fuck you're supposed to say. I don't really care.
It's the most remarkable and unremarkable thing you'll ever do, you know? I mean, we've all been born.
Yeah, a lot of people have kids, Linda. Fuck. Self-indulgent much? Jesus Christ.
But also congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, yeah, of course.
And wishing you well.
Yeah. 5-0. That is remarkably uncomfortable. Like, is this some Gen X shit? Like, just talking to another woman of like, oh, this will be a shared experience. It's like, my daughter is of ample bosom.
It's a thing.
And tiny waist. You must be able to relate to this story.
Yeah, it's a thing. Like, I'm sure it's actually a psychological phenomenon of parents who are a little too obsessed with the sexual prowess of their progeny. And kind of...
Even father-daughter?
Well, look at Paul Scholes. Seen any of that?
The toe-eating stuff. Toenail-eating, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, hell of a player.
I remember, I'm not going to name any names here, but like I've heard mothers speak about their sons with... I heard one mother describe their son as a stallion.
Oh, right.
And spoke with the level of pride about the sexual success, let's say, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
It must be a... I think it's a thing. I mean, we've heard Donald Trump talk about his daughter in terms that are a little bit like...
Really?
Okay,
how you going?
Well,
yeah.
Not sure if that's
I'd be dating her
healthy.
If she wasn't my daughter, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty clear.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a phenomenon.
I guess so.
It's just blokes just understanding everything.
Now, I can understand if that was Hazelwood's mum, because, I mean, what a horse that is. What's the least appropriate thing I could say to sign off the show?
I'm sure. Yeah.
Josh Hazelwood is absolutely staggering.
Is there any psychologists out there who can? I'm sure this is a phenomenon. It has to be. And I'm sorry, Linda, that you had to experience that. But thank God you're not in that family, huh?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Just the uncomfortable nature, anyway, of just being the sole person at a creek ground, then like someone coming up to you. You know, if you're sitting on your own,
I thought
like,
she was going to say something else.
You know, if you're like at a bus, it's back to that dogging thing from the previous story with Willie and Rudy. You know, phenomenal with like sitting at a bus stop or like you're sitting on your own at the cafe or something, and someone comes up to you and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. And it's someone you know as well. Like it's one of your best mates.
I don't genuinely know of a phenomenon where I'm sitting at a bus stop and you mean like someone just wants to talk to me?
Yeah, someone's just
okay.
Yeah. Or you're sitting on a plane, someone wants to have a chat.
Yeah, I do.
I even get that at the gym. Sometimes I just put headphones on but no music playing. Someone comes up and wants to have a chat.
Really?
Yeah.
At the gym?
Yep.
What do you reckon that's about?
Hard to say.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
Do you think it's because you're looking good?
I don't think so.
I remember when I was 18 and there was something approaching a rig and I was in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I still think about this. Sydney University gym. A woman came up to me and wanted to talk to me, but she said she said that my technique for the bicep curl was wrong.
Wow.
And I was suitably like turned off. As I was like, well, this is a complete outfuring.
That is a complete outfuring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But why is she talking to me? Like, what is that?
Is she negging you?
Was that what it was? I didn't know. I didn't understand. I might have even been 17.
I'll need to see some footage.
Yeah, sorry.
You haven't got
CCTV. It would have been a 3 flip phone at the time.
3, yeah, those were the days. Yeah. Australian team was sponsored by them.
Orange, yeah, they were quick.
Warren was bowling.
Yeah. Brett Lee,
Ponting's batting. Gabba. Oh, yeah.
I always thought the orange sponsor actually looked very wrong at the time. Orange on the whites looked wrong, but they were... That was like 02, 03. Yep. And that was...
Gilchrist had black gloves.
That was the nastiest, most dominant iteration of the Australian team because it was late Steve Waugh.
Oh, yeah. But it was like Travelex was the away sponsor.
Like 99, 2000 was like the apex of what they were doing. Yep. 02 was like a lag on the apex. So they were still unbelievably good and pummeling everybody in cricket was boring. But they were bored and angry and just, you know... Just trying to make things happen.
Yeah, more victims.
That was like, oh, let's select Brett Lee because we just want to see some pace and, you know what I mean?
Give some new sex.
Have a look at him.
Yeah.
Have a look at it.
Has a piece on it.
Mm.
All right.
Good bowler.
Hey, Australia just won the World Cup this morning. What an achievement. Who saw that coming? Not us. Not anyone, perhaps. Who cares? Australia won. We'll see you guys in a couple of weeks for a return of the great cricketer. Anything else to say? It's like 1 week off.
All the best.
All the best. All right. See you guys for the beginning of the Ashes, the Southern summer. I'm fucking excited for it. See you in a bit.